Thanks for watching, everyone. For our latest Artemis Live video interview, I'm delighted to welcome back Jeff Waters from Risk Modeling and Analytics Specialist, Moody's RMS. Now, Jeff is a meteorologist and he's been the product owner for the RMS North Atlantic Hurricane Models since 2018. And he's been at the company for more than a decade in roles only focused on hurricane modeling. So with the 2023 Atlantic hurricane season officially starting right about now, I thought it would be a great time to catch up with Jeff and get his outlook on the months ahead. So welcome, Jeff. It's really good to speak with you again.
Thanks so much, Steve. Very excited to be here.
So an interesting few months ahead. And as we were chatting about when we were planning for this, all the forecasts were pointing in one direction until an outlier came out in the last week. But to begin, perhaps you could lay out the meteorological setup for this year's Atlantic hurricane season and any sort of climate signals of relevance you feel for the months ahead.
Absolutely, yes. So the majority of the forecasts that have come out so far for the 2023 hurricane season, they've tended to focus on two competing factors. You know, the first is the ENSO stage of the basin, the Pacific basin, and what that might do in terms of the Atlantic basin. So in a lot of instances, there's a lot of confidence in El Nino states being transitioned into El Nino states over the next 6 months or next 6 to 8 months. And that has been known to suppress hurricane activity in the Atlantic. The other competing factor here is the sea surface temperatures in the Atlantic basin. And those continue to be well above average. So you have two different competing items happening. And I think in a lot of instances, the forecasts that are coming out for this season are almost expecting the two to offset each other to an extent. And that's why the majority of forecasts have been hovering around there being an average season in terms of the number of named storms, number of hurricanes, number of major hurricanes. But as you just mentioned, some of the more recent forecasts that have come out have started to, you know, deviate from that average range there. So certainly pointing to some of the uncertainty that could play out over the next, you know, 4 to 6 months, and especially if one of those signals, whether it be the state of the basin in terms of sea surface temperatures or the transition to an El Nino state, if one of those happens earlier or later than expected, or perhaps the El Nino state isn't quite as strong as it's currently projected to be, you know, that could have a direct influence on how the season plays out in terms of hurricane activity and total number of named storms.
Great. Thank you, Jeff. So on the subject of El Nino, it's obviously a high profile development this year, and it's a departure from the climate we've had for the last few seasons. What do you think about its influence? I mean, obviously, it's difficult to say at this stage, but I think the forecast is for it to be relatively strong by sort of later in the hurricane season this year. I mean, how much of a factor is that typically? And what's your expectation?
Yeah, it's a very important factor to monitor, you know, for a number of reasons. But, you know, one of the biggest reasons is that from a macro level, it does tend to suppress the hurricane activity, hurricane formation and intensification there in the basin because of its effect on wind shear. So, you know, that change in wind direction and height, that tends to be a little bit stronger when you have El Nino states. And that, of course, you know, suppresses the ability for a hurricane or a tropical cyclone to develop and strengthen. And you know, that being said, as you mentioned, you know, the strength of the El Nino state is certainly important to monitor as well. You can have weak El Nino and strong El Nino states. And the latest projections do hint and suggest a transition to a fairly strong El Nino state in the back half of the year, but there is some uncertainty in it around when that would actually happen. So, you know, if it happens much later in the hurricane season, you know, for instance, past the climatological peak, which tends to take place in September, you know, it might not have as big of an effect as you might you know, think. But if that transition takes place sooner and we do see that shift to a more strong or even just a more normal El Nino state, like perhaps during the August, September, October period, then yes, that will be happening around the climatological peak of hurricane season. And that's where we could see the biggest effects in terms of the ability to to keep the hurricane activity at bay. All that being said, though, we look at these projections over, months or several months, and then there's a lot more of the intra-annual variability in terms of a season that can affect, if and when hurricanes form and develop. So there's the overall trends that you look at over the course of the whole season, but there's also the sub-seasonal variability in conditions that can also, amplify or suppress these projections that have come out.
Yeah, and of course, it's always really down to where sort of landfalling storms, the fact that they actually reach land, but the location of where they landform, how much exposure concentration there might be in their way, and the values there. As to whether the insurance, reinsurance, or ILS markets see any major losses. Now, obviously, El Niño is one factor, but what other factors can play into sort of the potential for losses to be more meaningful for the marketplace?
So one thing I'd want to acknowledge and comment on is the sea surface temperature side of this equation. The state of the basin is hinting at much warmer than average SSTs, particularly in the subtropical and the eastern part of the basin, and even in parts of the Gulf of Mexico. But not only that, we're also seeing or projecting to see warmer sea surface temperatures that are very close to the coast as well. So when that happens, you could see instances where a tropical cyclone or a hurricane could develop, strengthen, and threaten to make landfall very quickly with very short notice. So that's the kind of thing that we don't like to see, but unfortunately, we've seen happen a bit more frequently on the last several years because it directly affects the ability for either individuals, policyholders, or all the way up to organizations in different parts of the market to prepare and essentially be ready for a storm of that nature. And so looking at where these storms form, how quickly they can intensify leading up to landfall, that's certainly one thing that we keep an eye on. But in addition, if and when a storm makes landfall, there could certainly be varying levels of effects depending on where that storm makes landfall. So as you mentioned, Steve, in 2020, for instance, we had a number of landfalls in the Gulf, but in most of those instances, the landfalls took place in affected areas that were away from exposure-dense areas or exposure centers. Granted, that there were still, quite a bit of exposures that were affected. So we do want to keep an eye on what parts of the coastline tend to be most populated and therefore at the biggest risk of loss. And then another thing I would mention too is, looking at the various hurricane states and regions in the U.S. and even abroad outside of the U.S., and there's different parts of the region are in different stages of stability and recovery. If we see, for instance, another hurricane make landfall where Hurricane Ian made landfall last year in the southern parts of Florida, or maybe in Louisiana again, where Hurricane Ida made landfall in 2021. That's going to have much different effects, especially in areas that are either still recovering or in Florida. There's quite a bit going on in terms of the overall stability of the market, the healthiness of the market. And if you were to see storms make landfall there, it could certainly compound the complexity of the recovery and the complexity of the overall, loss impacts compared to a storm making landfall someplace else along the coastline. So it's one thing to look at the likelihood and the development and the projected tracks for hurricanes that do form, but we also have a lot to look at in terms of where exactly along the coastline these storms are making landfall, the state of the market or the local markets there to handle that kind of a storm, especially given where they are from a recovery standpoint, given recent events. And all of that kind of paints the picture of a lot of different moving pieces that we have to monitor, and we encourage the market to monitor on a regular basis throughout the season.
Yeah, that's a really good explanation there. Thank you, Jeff. Now, you mentioned the sea surface temperatures and also the fact that in pockets it seems they're quite exceptionally warm, really, for the time of year. Some of those being close in, some further out, but also I understand the Gulf of Mexico as well. Now, some of the forecasts that we've seen so far have sort of cited a potential increased threat or increased sort of possibility of storm formation and storms being sent towards the US East or Southeast, including Florida. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. It is something that we are seeing as well, and it is something that we're going to be prepared to monitor as quickly and as regularly as we can because of how short of notice that suggests, lead time to prepare not just from a model vendor like Moody's RMS, but also for the broader market. And one thing, kind of building on a previous comment there from a previous question, one thing we also want to keep an eye on is, when these storms do form in such energy-rich environments where the water levels and or water temperatures are very warm, especially near the coast, that also means that they can intensify quite quickly. And we've seen over the last, 5, 6 years, so many instances of storms that develop or track over these very warm waters very close to the coast undergo what's known as rapid intensification, very, very close and just before they make landfall. So, that can mean the difference between a category one or two landfall versus a major hurricane landfall in just a matter of hours. So, it's so important for us in the market to monitor where these pockets of very warm waters are, and also what that could mean in terms of how quickly a storm could develop and, more importantly, intensify. And we saw that happen so often with storms like Ian last year, and certainly some of the storms of 2020 and 2021. And it just goes to show that, we're entering into an age now where there's just additional factors at play, and we're seeing some of these trends, some of these patterns that are leading to storm intensification and rapid intensification nonetheless, especially in these areas along the coast or near the coast where those SSTs are already warm. I mean, just to for a point of comparison, in some parts of the basin right now, the SSTs, the sea surface temperatures are as warm as they normally would be in the late summer timeframe. So we're already seeing hints of that energy, the energy that we use to fuel, tropical cyclones already be there, already set up for, a potentially, busy season, depending on how strong that El Nino transition and it tends to be.
And I guess on that basis, a follow-up question might be, do you think there's a chance of a more front-loaded season? We've seen a lot of activity towards the back end of seasons recently, but if the sea surface temperatures are so high and El Nino is predicted to be more of a factor later in the year, is there a possibility that this year storms are coming a bit earlier than people have become used to?
I think that's part of the uncertainty in these competing factors. I think there could be a scenario like that could play out. Depend like if we see a later onset of El Nino and a continued, warmer than average basin, especially where storms are more likely to develop and form. But at the same time, you could have the reverse happen. You could have that transition to El Nino happen much sooner and be a lot stronger and, really suppress the added energy that you're likely to get from those warm sea surface temperatures. So, I think that plays into the importance of understanding the uncertainty in any given forecast, whether it be seasonal or whether it be some kind of sub-seasonal forecast. And that's also partly why you're seeing a couple of those forecasting agencies deviate from where the majority of forecasts have been thus far. In the season. So with several other agencies that are scheduled to come out, with more updates throughout the season, it'll be interesting to see whether we see a shift, to a more active or even a shift to a less active season than what's already been put out there. So it's just so important to understand, the uncertainty here and what kinds of things would have to play out in order for you to end up on that one end of the uncertainty range or one end of the range versus another. And that just goes to reiterate the importance of looking at not just the macro level seasonal patterns, but also the kinds of things that could happen within a season that could ebb and flow and amplify or suppress the activity over a shorter period of time, like 2 or 3 weeks, as opposed to 2 or 3 months.
And I guess you only have to look at the last few days at the just off the North Carolina coast, really, to see what might be possible this year, as there was a major storm there that was potentially close to being becoming a tropical system, I think, from the way some meteorologists were discussing it. Of course, this also, sorry, Jeff.
No problem. Yep.
Of course, this also speaks to the need to understand your exposure as well, particularly for the insurance, reinsurance, and ILS market. And obviously, RMS, provider of risk models. And I believe you've got an update coming to the hurricane model soon. So perhaps you could give our viewers and listeners a brief sort of advance overview of what's coming and what's changing.
That's yeah, happy to do that. And you're exactly right. We do have an update coming for our North Atlantic hurricane models. It's scheduled for release in June, and it represents a pretty sizable advancement in our modeling framework and just the overall innovation of our CAT models here from a hurricane perspective. We're incorporating a lot in the way of new data, new learnings, new research. A lot of that stems from recent events, like over the last 4 or 5, 6 years, including events all the way up to and including Hurricane Ian from last year. So the ability to gather those insights and then fold those into the model to keep that view of risk as up to date as possible, that's such a paramount priority for us from a CAT modeling perspective. And so when you look at this update that's coming, it's all parts of the model are being updated in some way, shape, or form, in some capacity. And perhaps one of the biggest areas that we've progressed this model is from a vulnerability, standpoint. We've been fortunate enough to bring in a lot in the way of new detailed claims data, and that certainly helps us get a better sense of how our curves are developed and calibrated. But the additional, byproduct of this is it gives us the ability to also expand the breadth of the way in which the model is reflecting unique damage curves. So we've actually expanded the number of unique damage curves on the order of 50% or more in this update to improve the way in which risk is reflected and differentiated within and across regions and within and across building characteristics. And a lot of that is stems from pulling in new data and some of the insights, the great new research that's being conducted and led throughout the market from various organizations like the IBHS, for instance. And also some of that comes from us on the Moody's RMS side, putting our engineers on the ground following events like Ian and other recent events to survey the extent and the damage profiles of the affected areas firsthand. And we know we're not the only ones to do that, but it certainly helps, complement any in situ data we're bringing in or any kind of claims data. It all kind of serves as pieces of the puzzle, so to speak, and to give us or allow us to reflect this ever-evolving risk landscape here from a hurricane perspective as accurately as we can and as comprehensively as we can. So that's the kind of update we're looking to release over the next few weeks. But as another point to make, as you mentioned, the importance of understanding your exposures, it's so critical to make sure that whether you're, no matter what part of the insurance value chain you're in, the primary side, the reinsurance side, or the ILS side, understanding and having an up-to-date view of industry exposure, industry valuation, understanding to what extent inflationary trends are being folded into and reflected into that exposure at risk, for instance, that is also something that's very much a top priority from a Moody's RMS perspective. So sitting next to and complementing the updated, hurricane model, we're also updating our industry exposure databases for US hurricane and for Caribbean hurricane. So that allows us to bring in, a lot in the way of these inflationary trends, all the way up to and including the beginning of 2023, in addition to a number of other new pieces of information about the building stock at risk, the replacement costs, and even some updated insurance terms and conditions. So collectively, and you bring it all together, it's an update to our model. And then for those who rely on the industry exposure database for that up-to-date view of industry exposure at risk, that's also something that's being updated. And it does allow us to kind of bring all that up to kind of where we are today in terms of capturing this dynamic risk landscape.
Sounds very comprehensive and good to hear inflation mentioned as well. It's such a hot topic still, and with some of the news that came out of California in the last week that what was it, the building replacement costs are accelerating still faster than inflation when inflation itself is so high. It really is critical for the industry to get on top of that and be able to analyze their portfolios accurately. So
Absolutely. And just to add to that, you know, we talk about these this blanket term of inflationary trends, but there's so many other pieces there that kind of fit into that kind of a statement. So it's we talk about, you know, the cost to replace a structure, the labor cost, the impacts on the supply chain. So there's so many different facets of a statement like, you know, inflationary trends. So I'm glad you elaborate a little bit there on all these different things that play into having an up-to-date and currently valued, you know, book of risk or book of exposure that you're assessing.
yeah, it's really an important factor and can't be underplayed at the moment. I mean, it's had such a significant effect on the marketplace as well as on the risk, as people try to ensure they have the capital available for the expanding exposure that they're taking on and keeping and holding. So finally, perhaps from sort of the reinsurance industry point of view, what do you think are the critical things to remember as this hurricane season begins?
I think one of the most important things that can't be understated and can't be stated enough is just how, no matter what the forecast is for a season, whether it be very active, very inactive, or somewhere in the middle. We've said this before, and a number of other, you know, organizations out there are saying it too, and reminding the market that all it takes is one storm to make landfall that can completely reshape how you think of a season and also reshape how you think of the state of the market. You know, we saw Hurricane Ian last year make be one of the only, you know, notable landfalling storms in the US. And of course, that was a big one. Ended up being right now, you know, the costliest Florida hurricane in history. So that's a reminder we're consistently trying to, you know, tell our users and the broader market. And so that's one thing to keep in mind. And not only that, you know, understanding that not all things are equal in terms of if and when a landfalling storm does take place in the recovery, what that overall loss impact looks like, what that recovery looks like, especially if we see a major landfalling storm in a place that's still you know, going through that recovery process in the likes of, you know, Florida or parts of Louisiana. There's also bigger questions too on the effect of, you know, recent reforms and recent legislation in places like Florida that are trying to curb the impacts of things that can really amplify the cost of a claim or the overall loss picture. So things like social inflation and assignment of benefits, which is a subcomponent of social inflation. You know, there's a lot of reforms and legislation that have been passed to try to stabilize and curb those impacts. So it'll be interesting to see if there's a storm that makes landfall in a place like Florida, how effective that new those new reforms are in keeping the those kinds of, you know, those kinds of things that are really amplifying the overall claim severity at bay. And I think one final thing I'd say too, and I mentioned it a little bit here and there, is that yes, you look at these forecasts of these over the course of a season and what you might see play out from an El Nino or a SST perspective, but there's lots of other things that are going to happen in between that are going to directly affect the variability in terms of the basin and the likelihood of storms to develop and form throughout the year. So, for instance, you know, how looking at the Saharan air layer, so how much dry air is coming off of Africa, which actively suppresses and quiets the basin because there's so much dry air mixing in, or you know, where is the Bermuda High going to be at some point in the season, which can often funnel and affect the track of storms. And it can mean the difference between storms that recurve out to sea or storms that take a more direct path towards the US. And then even more broadly speaking, you know, we've talked a lot about the US, but we think about the Atlantic Basin as a whole, you know, the Caribbean as well, and for instance, among other regions. And you know, we look at a forecast for the season, it could have a number of different impacts, not just in the US, but other areas too. So whether you're in the primary or more importantly, the reinsurance and ILS space, you know, continue to look at all these different factors, all these different things, and do, let us know where you have questions and where you'd like some more, guidance or thought leadership in that space.
Great, thank you, Jeff. You really laid out all of the various areas of uncertainty well there. So, really appreciate you speaking with me today. It's going to be a very interesting season to follow on, and I look forward to catching up with you again probably next year, and maybe we should debrief the season.
Sounds great. Looking forward to it, Steve. Thanks again for your time.
Thank you, Jeff.